أيها الأساتذة، الصوت You're neither. You're an errand boy. Sent by grocery clerks. To collect the bill.
Well, here we go, boys and girls. We're back in the saddle again. Sorry I missed that show that didn't go out. That was a problem. I confused the webmaster, and that's my fault. So we sent you out another good one from our archives yesterday or last night. The problem is that she speaks California, and I speak right back here in Indiana. I'm turning into one of these Hoosiers. You know, there's a lot of those Negroes up there in Chi-Town and New York City that think they're tough as hell, mean motor scooters. Yeah. But I'm going to introduce you to somebody that makes them look like Girl Scouts, man. To start off the show here from Rogue Progressive. He picked this up. It's pretty good. I'm telling you. Next time you look at a mestizo that wants to get together with your daughter, you better think about it, because the person we're going to talk about's Asian. And that Asian blood, you see, the mestizos have a lot of Asian blood. Those millions of them are in here now. People, you know, they call them Indians. Well, no, they're not Indians. They're Mongoloid and these mestizo Mexicans. A good share of them have lots of Mongoloid blood. And you know how the Mongoloids like to torture and do the head chopping off and all that kind of stuff? Well, that's what you're looking at, man. Look at the cartels. They're doing all kinds of that kind of stuff. So here we go, boys and girls, your clip of the day.
But let the night go by without mentioning this execution in North Korea. Did you hear about this? The Kim Un crazy. Jesus, what can you imagine what it must be like living in North Korea? It would make Orwell's London in 1984 look like, I don't know, a vacation spot. But North Korea executed its defense chief. According to South Korea's National Intelligence Service, Hyun Yong-choi, who headed that country's military, he was like the defense minister. He was charged with treason, including disobeying Kim and falling asleep during an event at which Kim Un crazy was present. His execution was watched by hundreds of people, according to the National Intelligence Service in South Korea. Do you know how they killed him? Do you, Kathy? You told me about the story. You know how they executed him? They put him in front of an anti-aircraft gun. Jesus Christ. And then fired it. An anti-aircraft gun. Oh, my God. The purges in North Korea, apparently, you want to do something very interesting tonight or whenever you have a chance. Go to YouTube and type in North Korea. And there are some videos of North Korea. I, when you look at these videos, it's just, I don't know, it is scary. To me, it looks like places I've been in my dreams. You know, where there are no people around and there's a foreign kind of landscape and there's lots of anxiety in the dream. That's what it is, an anxiety dream. But that's what these video images that have been smuggled out of North Korea, that's what they evoke in me, bad dreams. Maybe you've already looked at it. But Seoul's National Intelligence Service are the ones who have verified this. Now, they say there is no sign of instability in this regime of Kim Un Crazy. But if these purges continue, something may happen. It would be great, wouldn't it, to see Kim Un Crazy, this totally insane grandson of the founder of North Korea. I don't know. I think it would be fun to see him strung up, and don't kill him. Just string him up and let him hang there until he finally dies. Kim had previously ordered the execution of 15 senior officials this year as punishment for challenging his authority. And according to the National Intelligence Service in South Korea, some 70 officials have been executed since Kim took over in 2011 after his old man died. What? Job security? But to execute him with an anti-aircraft gun? Jesus, God, was there anything left to scrape up and put in an envelope for the family?
Right out of the pages of Genghis Khan, like I told you, a whole lot of these people that are running around in the Middle East, in ISIL, chopping off heads, comes from the same blood, or at least a lot of it, and the same kind of people are coming into this country by the droves. There's, I don't know how many, maybe there's a million of them in Chicago, within a two-hour drive of me. In L.A., forget it. It's filled with these people. And if the opportunity comes and they decide they want to do something, they're going to have warlords. Yes, you'll see the warlords. They're already emerging around the world, and they'll emerge in the United States, of which the military will not have too much of effect on them, because these people are ruthless. I'm not passing judgments on the Genghis Khan. I'm not passing judgments on ISIL. That's their bit. That's what they do. And like our forefathers in Europe had to do when they come into Europe, they had to become just as ruthless to drive them out and kill them off. And that's what will have to happen here when that time comes. Well, I see they're insisting on destroying California. They overpopulated the state for cheap labor, both the Republicans and the Democrats, but mostly the Republicans. Democrats want these little brown people to vote. They don't vote in very big numbers, but still, it affects things. And then they, now the water, we're running out of water. Well, if you had a population that California should have, you wouldn't be running out of water even with a dry spell. But now you're facing that, California is. Massive crime, massive pollution, and thousands of gallons of oil now have poured onto the beaches. So goes California. Like I said before, when I ran for Congress, I tried everything I could to get them to change their water program to desalinization along the coast as much as possible, and drastic changes in corporate agriculture and irrigation systems. But do you think any paper would print it? No. That was in 1980 I was screaming about that. But just remember, if there's huge profits in something, they're not going to change it, except on the pain of death. These corporations, they will never back off without some other method being employed, because they're making way too much money, and they're not going to do it. And even when they get caught with their fingers in the cookie jar, well, they get the courts fine them a few million bucks, and they're making billions. I'm telling you, nothing's going to change without uprising of some kind. And forget about the ballot box, because that's been screwed up for a long, long time. Well, let's check into South Africa. We haven't been down there for a while. See if all this great white nation that has been overrun with Negroes due to the greed of the early British who went there to exploit the mines and all that kind of stuff, and the diamonds and the gold. And the white workers were edged out, and they had a civil war down there for a while on the Rand. And the whites rose up, and they almost, the white workers took over for a while. They had to bring in the Air Force to bomb them and machine gun them. And then finally they got what they wanted, almost an all-black workforce. And like always, just like the plantation society, it was always based on the small percentage of people at the top making tremendous profits and not caring too much about the, or very much at all about the white workers. In the same week, okay, last week a relative called me to see if I could help their, our younger relative, a teenage girl, find a mentor for her to take a girl child to work day. In the same week, Cape Town gangster George Geweld Thomas was convicted of 53 charges, including murder, racketeering, and theft. Some of the offenses, including the murders, committed while he was already in prison awaiting trial. Guess what color he was? Around the same time, two of the four young men accused of killing Mozambican national Emmanuel Josias were denied bail. At face value, the three incidents are unrelated, yet they are part of the same narrative. I have written about it before that it pains me that South Africa ignores the plight of the young black males. Now get this, how you can turn it around, totally turn it around. Hopeless race mixers, hopeless. I don't want to call them liberals because there's been a hell of a lot of smart liberals in society, especially in the old days. Liberal has lost its meaning. We hope that they will sort themselves out. That is why we have a day dedicated to showing young girls that a different world exists, but hardly anything of the same magnitude for their brothers. Many boys, we assume, have the future figured out for no other reason than that they are boys. Grow up to be Geweld or Alex Youngsters. Let me hasten to say that I support the principle of exposing girls to possibilities that exist. Whoa. Patriarchy is too entrenched in South Africa not to recognize that many young women have been raised and still believe that their role in life is to be subservient to men. I just believe that they ignore the reality that in South Africa, historical marginalization by class and race is as real as keeping some of the peripheries on account of their sex. Of course, nobody says anything about there is no such thing as equality, because now the new norm in South Africa is politically everybody's equal. Geweld and the Alexander Youngsters have more in common than even they probably appreciate. They were all raised in poor communities where violence is norm, nigger violence, of course, and where the majority of the victims of this violence look like them. Yeah, they're all Negroes. They're part of an unending cycle of Negro poverty, Negro violence, and where a few positive male roles, models, figures are judged by the consumables their cash can buy. Pictures of Geweld and his gang published in the media showed the group as enjoying their moment in the sun, with some making the 8 sign to emphasize their membership in the 28th criminal gang that operates in and outside the prison. You see the what happens when you bring massive numbers of Negroes or any other, actually any other race, into your country for cheap labor by the very rich British investors, as they did in the old days. Same thing with the plantation. You see, it's all the same. It's a type of predatory capitalism, always was. It used to be called mercantilism, but now it's predatory capitalism. Their lives epitomize the tragic of being black and male and poor in a country where being all these means that life's dance is loaded against you, you see? This is the philosophy of these people. Nothing that tells anybody that they're inferior. They're just not given a fair shake. I get the impression that we avoid peeking into that, to that world that created them, because we fear we might be accused of trying to justify their dastardly acts. Well, you are. Unfortunately, to minimize the likelihood of another Geweld, we have to understand the streets that made them. Oh, I see. They didn't do anything to make themselves. It's the streets that made them that way. We have to understand what it is about a community that makes young men, black men, merrily stab another in full view of others, regardless of whether it was robbery or a xenophobic attack. Well, that's what they do. That's what they've done ever since they've been introduced into white society. And, of course, they did it to each other in Africa with probably bigger swords and machetes. I'm afraid we fail future Geewelds and the sithole killers because we have accepted the plight of our young men as ordinary, as ordained from up high in poverty and hopelessness, as standard. Well, they're black. It is as if we no longer had communities such as those where Geewald and the Alex boys grew up. We would no longer have authenticity. Yeah, that's the way they are. Whoever said that to keep it real had no love for those whose reality is the violence and easy death that Bishop Lavis and Alex have witnessed for generations. Many feminists will argue that being a woman under the same situation is far worse. I beg to differ. The majority, if not all, of Geewald's victims were young black males. One of the reasons the likes of Geewald continue to exist is that we have normalized poverty and lack of opportunities for the majority of our youth. They need more opportunity. Many of us say with this displaced pride that we grew up in rough neighborhoods. Rough neighborhoods are extended prisons, and you can't get out of them. Oh, yes, you can. You can work, get a job, buy an old car, and get out of there and go someplace else. There's no apartheid there anymore to stop you, keep you roped in where you can't endanger white society. Rough neighborhoods are extended prisons. One does not need to go to a museum to see a statue to be reminded of the extent of apartheid's impact on its victims. Well, they wanted cheap labor, but they wanted segregation. You see, that's why I say segregation never has worked. Only complete geographical separation works. See, the South adopted segregation, and that's so the money men could make money but still live in their white neighborhoods. Yeah, I want you to work for me and make me money in the daytime, but I don't want to have any drinks with you at night. You see, that's the hypocritical part of the capitalist mentality when it comes to race. You only need to take a walk around any township such as Geewald's own Bishop Lavis or Alexander Streets, where sithole drops of blood were let. We can jail as many Geewalds as we want. He was convicted along with 17 members of his gang, nigger gang, that, however, has not solved the problem of gangs and crime in the Cape Flats there in South Africa. Mothers will continue to have to pray and hope that their sons are not seduced to the world of violence and youthful corpses. The same applies to Sithole's killers. We can jail and condemn the Alex boys as much as we like, but unless we're honest with how the gender, race, class nexus in this country creates individuals like Geewald and the sithole killers, we will continue treating the symptoms and calling the jailings of such figures justice. And that's from the Pretoria Papers. Come next Tuesday, May 28th, South Africa will celebrate the 13th time that young girls have been shown that a better world exists out there. They might as well warn them to be on the lookout for the many Gayrels and the Alexander boys with unresolved social issues waiting to prey on them and all of us. And that was written by, I believe, a black person from the Pretoria newspaper. Well, in a bid for support of the evangelical wing of the Republican Party, the party, Property Party, Property Predatory Capitalist Party, Senator Ted Cruz spoke to a private gathering of 600 neocon conservative pastors and their wives Thursday morning in Washington. You know, preachers, some of them go to religious colleges and things like that. But otherwise, I would take advice from the local bartender much quicker than any preacher. The Texas Republican was the only 2016 presidential hopeful to speak at the annual Watchman on the Wall conference held at the Hyatt Regency on Capitol Hill. And here we go. Quote, the modern Democratic Party has become so radical, so extreme, that they have determined that their devotion to mandatory gay marriage in all 50 states trumps any allegiance to religious liberty under the First Amendment, unquote, Cruz told the ballroom. We've got an obligation, as this conference recognizes, to be watchmen on the wall, because, he says, religion is under attack. The Watchman on the Wall briefing is sponsored by the Family Research Council to connect pastors with policy and legislation so they can rule over the rest of us. The group has more than doubled in size since last year, and there are now more than 38,000 Watchman pastors in the U.S., up from 16,000 in 2014, according to the Family Research Council. Last year, the group told Time it wanted to grow the Watchman to 40,000 pastors by 2015 in advance of the 2016 election. Oh yeah, how you use religion. Yeah, the politicians love to use religion. Cruz's father, Raphael, a pastor with strong neocon evangelical ties, introduced him. Quote, hopefully the next president of the United States, unquote, to the group after joking to Family Research Council leaders that he expects to be sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom. Last year, Raphael Cruz gave a speech to the Watchman on the five principles of whom the Bible tells them to vote for. Oh boy, my son will not compromise his principles in Washington, he reminded the crowd. Well, he became a politician. He's already compromised his principles. You cannot be elected without compromising your principles, whatever those principles might be. In his remarks, Ted Cruz portrayed religion in America as under assault. Every church is surrounded and they're going to get you, man. If they don't get you, the devil will. And we don't have to worry about these millions of Mexicans coming in. We don't have to worry about the whole world is in flame. We don't have to worry about your cities filling up and totally full of blacks and every other wretched refuse, as the Statue of Liberty says. Don't worry about all that. Jesus is going to save us. If we get in bad shape here, he's going to take us out of here. And if the Jews will confess and follow Jesus, they'll be saved too. Otherwise, they're going to be annihilated. He referenced the heartbreaking religious freedom battles in Indiana and Arkansas, where the state lawmakers backed down from laws that critics said would allow discrimination against gays and lesbians. You see, all this is false flag stuff. Keep your mind off the wars and the gutting of our money to support other countries all over the world, and how we're spending almost $1 trillion a year on armaments and so forth. They don't want you to think about that and all the guys that were sending over there to get killed, harvesting poppy fields in Afghanistan. They don't want you thinking about stuff like that. They want you thinking about, oh, there's a homo around the block. He's going to get you. And my shop won't sell him a cake. It's ridiculous, but it's so... They're brilliant at it. They're experts at it, especially the Republicans. You know, when I was earlier in my life, I used to think the Democrats were the biggest con men. But I've changed my mind. I think the Republicans are. He also used the moment to set himself apart as a candidate for president. Quote, let me tell you something that was even sadder was just how many Republicans ran for the hills, he said. Yeah, we got this whole state up in an uproar over stupid stuff that just takes up your time away from the main stuff, the big stuff, the important stuff. Indianapolis crime, the state capital. The dork we got as a governor, Republican, came out of the communications business. I think he was a talk show host one time. He's even thinking about running for president. Oh, jeez. Quote, I'll point out some of the Republicans running in 2016 were nowhere to be found when Indiana was fought. That's because they didn't feel it was important. I will tell you this, I will always, always, always stand for a fight for religious liberty in every American. Unquote. Well, what? See, this started all over this little pie shop, which is about, well, it's only about a half an hour drive from me, 45 minutes, where the people said they didn't want to sell goods to homosexuals. Well, I think people have every right not to sell anything to anybody. But you don't usually don't stay in business too long that way because you need customers. I mean, when I was in the business in California as a television repairman and so forth, I took care of black customers and I took care of Mexican customers. That doesn't mean I changed any of my views, but you do have to make a living. So that was a big deal here in Indiana. That's something people really get their teeth in around here, some stupid crap like that. And if I was homosexual and went into a shop that didn't want to sell me a cake, I'd say, okay, fine, I'll go to Richie Goldstein down the street. I know he'll sell me a cake. But these are the issues that the Republican Party want to hang their hat on because they know the electorate are so stupid. The audience erupted in applause. Crews clapped along with them. Someone started blowing a shofar, a traditionally Jewish liturgical instrument, often made the horn of a ram. Yeah, we got the old Jew shit in there. Oh, we got to have them all the crazies. Cruz also touted his experience as Solicitor General in Texas fighting against, oh my God, atheists at the Supreme Court and defending a veteran cross memorial in the Mojave Desert. And he attacked the White House response to ISIS. Quote, they are crucifying Christians. You see, they don't say whether they're white or non-white or anything like that. It's just anybody that puts a cross on. They're beheading children. You cannot win a war on radical Islamic terrorism with a president who is unwilling to utter the words radical Islamic terrorism. Well, why do you have to say it? You know they are. Or they're trying to clear their country of the stupid infidel. Yeah. Get out of my country, you sons of bitches. It's my country. And if you don't, I'll cut your heads off. Makes sense to me. And aligned himself instead with Pope Francis, who has called for these Christians to be protected. You can't protect these people all over the world. And the U.S. citizens that go over there are crazy and deserve what they get. Cruz received at least three standing ovations during his 24-minute talk. He urged the pastors to influence their mind-controlled churches and networks to vote. Get them out there to vote. Get them out there to vote. That's what you got to do. He claimed that 45 million evangelical Christians do not vote, and that their votes are needed to get America back on track. What does that mean? More money for warfare? Make it $2 trillion next year. Quote, God isn't done with America yet, unquote. When did he speak to God? Where is this God? Why did he... Come on, talk to me, you old bastard. Cruz said, you are warriors spreading the truth. The truth will set us free. See, this is all the crap that they put out at election time. Everybody that doesn't agree with them is terrible. Terrible. Cruz took the stage after Wayne Grudeman, a theology professor at the Evangelical Phoenix Seminary, known for his teachings that men have spiritual leadership over women. Oh, Gruden compared Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to Martin Luther King Jr., saying Perkins is a modern-day king for standing up for Christian beliefs. They're really trying to con the blacks. Of course, the blacks have been conned for so long. They just get out from under slavery after the Civil War. Well, and then they adopt a Christian religion. Now, if you were a slave and you finally got free, why would you adopt a religion that promotes slavery? And don't say it doesn't. It's all through the Old Testament, slavery. That just shows you an inferior race of people. They should have at least developed their own religion. In fact, the religion of animism in Africa was far preferable to Christianity. Oh, anyhow, that's enough of that crap. Let's see if we can find anything else as exciting going on. Well, the Islamic State entity made significant gains this week in its territorial control over an ever-growing swath of the Middle East. Its activities continue to pace as well. In addition to the capture of the Iraqi city of Ramadi, where we lost hundreds of troops, American troops, and hundreds of thousands of Arab people, or Iraqi people, were killed, murdered with phosphorus and so forth, and depleted uranium, which will be there for hundreds of years. That was just a few days ago. ISIS appears to have also succeeded in capturing the ancient Syrian city of Palmyra and threatened to blow the shit out of everything. Well, I smell Jews behind this, because they don't want any history to be used for anything other than underlying that the Jews know everything and their religion is everything. So it's in their interest to wipe out all the evidence of the civilizations of the past, and many of them were white. Just like they destroyed the antiquities and stole the antiquities out of the museums in Baghdad. Yeah. I smell a Jew. According to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, with its, you know, there is no such thing as human rights, because there is no such thing as a true right. A right is something that supposedly can never be taken away from you for any reason, because God has given it to you, or the government has given it to you, or the king has given it to you. But what they have given you can be taken away, so it's not a right. With power and the military or whoever, Al Capone or whatever, they can kick your door in and take anything you've got. Of course, Al can't anymore. He's in the happy hunting ground. With its capture of the ancient oasis city of Palmyra, ISIS now controls nearly 50% of Syria. Palmyra is located between Syrian capital of Damascus in southwestern Syria and the centrally located city of Deir al-Zour. It is the Syrian's Homs province. The capture of Palmyra is hugely important not only because it's the first major Syrian city ISIS has captured unassisted by various other anti-Assad forces. Of course, they want to have regime change there and get rid of Assad, so I smell the CIA behind that too. but also because of its enormous historical significance. The city dates back to the first century of the Common Era and was a central crossroads for trade from the east to the Roman Empire. Palmyra is a UNESCO World Heritage Site for its architectural, historical, and art treasures. The capture of Palmyra by the ISIS was announced by the terrorist entity on Twitter, and most major media outlets are treating this account as factual. The outcries against the capture of Palmyra by historians and art curators has angered many who see this as valuing art over human lives. Well, it's true. Of course, property is much more important than human lives. It's always been. As part of the conquest of the Palmyra and surrounding areas, ISIS now controls not only more land than the regime, but it also controls most of Syria's oil and gas fields. Now what are we going to do, boys? Well, sooner or later, I think we're going to have to send a whole bunch of good white southern troops over there to get their ass blown off. More troops on the ground, man. As noted on the news site, Western Journalism, control over Palmyra also provides a strategic base from which ISIS can advance on other cities held by Assad, including Homs and Damascus. Of course, I told you their strategy yesterday. Their strategy is perfect, better than most of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. At least one Israeli Middle East expert, and I can't pronounce his name, of Channel 10 predicted that the fall of Palmyra will signal the end of Assad's central government. And he's also got an escape plan to supposedly set up. Why, any leader in the Middle East or any place else should have an escape plan. Even in this country, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. These leaders, people are going to become so upset that they're going to rise up probably one day, someday, and they'll have to have an escape plan. But where are they going to go? Well, maybe to Iron Mountain and live the rest of their life in a cave. He pointed to the fact that Assad is losing territory to Islamic State every day and is now in control of only a quarter of the Syria's territory. Well, Assad's troops usually are not fighting because they love Assad. That's why. And they're not going to give their life for nothing. So they're slowing down. The Israeli commentator also reported that Assad has prepared an escape plan should ISIS capture Damascus. He's going to leave and move to Miami Beach and run a hot dog stand. Assad's plan, according to this guy, I can't pronounce his name, is that the Syrian dictator will withdraw his forces to the western part of Syria, the stronghold of Assad's own Alawite minority. Well, it didn't help Gaddafi when they decided to murder Gaddafi. Alawites are a small sect within the Shia Muslims. See, more religious insanity, or at least using religious insanity as a weapon. When will people ever learn? More death and destruction throughout the world is caused by religion than political parties and armies. ISIS has achieved such dramatic victories for many reasons. Well, one of the reasons is they got balls and they're ruthless enough to let people know, either get out of the way or we're going to chop your head off. Not only because of the West's initial refusal to take it seriously, well, the CIA created it under Bush, and now we'll see how it goes. This all morphed from the invasion of Iraq. All of it. Anything happening over there morphed from the invasion by Dick Cheney and the other war criminal, George Bush Jr. That's where it came from. And also, it's barbarism acting as a lure for disaffected global sadists. Any war, there's sadists on all sides. Believe me, I've met sadists that are in the U.S. Marine Corps and the Army. I've met them and heard some of the bizarre stories they talk about, mutilating bodies and everything. Every military, every political party has those kind of people. One successful method of recruitment, as this fellow says, also points out, has been the massive jailbreak orchestrated by ISIS during its capture of Palmyra. Well, of course, just like the French Revolution, the minute you overthrow the government, you release all the prisoners because they got an axe to grind. And they're going to fight for you. They're going to fight with you. And if they don't, you kill them. So the first thing you do in this country, if things got really hairy and people, guerrilla operations and warlords got control of certain areas of the country, they'd open the prisons up and recruit all these prisoners to fight on their side. Of course, that's standard practice. The thousands of released Syrians, many of whose crimes were that they were opponents of the regime, were welcomed into ISIS forces. Quote, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend," unquote, is a slogan the newly released Syrians may embrace to Assad's dismay. Well, like I say, he's probably already got a house purchased down there in Miami Beach. That's usually where they all go. I know in Fallbrook, California, out in the canyon, out in the backcountry, there was a big house out there, very expensive house, and it was an ex-Cuban general lived in it. He had business operations all over California. Yeah, he escaped Castro when Castro bumped all these guys off and got them out. Well, he got out, and they bring all that crooked money with them. Well, the Haimis over there in Israel say they will not pay a $1.1 billion war to Iran over a dispute dating back to the period of the Islamic Revolution, won by Tehran this week in the Swiss federal court. Quote, "Under the laws of trade, we cannot transfer funds to an enemy country," unquote, read a statement issued by the Finance Ministry of Israel. Well, of course, all they have to do is declare the people they owe money as an enemy, and they get off the hook. And the response came after the court ordered Eilat Ashkelon Pipeline Company, EAPC, to pay the National Iranian Oil Company, NIOC, $1.1 billion over a joint venture that began long before the Ayatollahs seized Tehran's government. The plaintiffs also demanded $7 million in legal fees, although it is not clear whether the court approved the charge. In addition, the court allowed Iran to file a $7 billion arbitration claim against the Jewish state. Wow. In 1968, the two countries made a deal to carry oil from Asia. Let's see here. I lost my place. They made a deal to carry oil from Asia to Eilat and on to Europe. At the time, the NIOC delivered 14.75 million cubic meters of crude oil worth $450 million to Israel's Transasiatic Oil. You see how these people do? The oil moved via the pipeline that reached from Israel's southernmost port eastward to its Mediterranean port of Ashkelon, and then up the coast to its northern port of Haifa. Today, the EAPC pipeline in Israel stretches approximately 750 kilometers, according to the company's website. The Ayatollahs cut off Iran's business with Israel and its deal with EAPC as soon as the ruling Shah was eliminated from the government, saying the Islamic Republic did not recognize Israel as a legitimate nation, which is really not. To this day, Iran still vows to wipe the Zionist entity from the map of the world. If they quit declaring that, I think they'd get farther and just do it. These guys wave their arms and scream. Israel seized Iranian assets and launched a countersuit to offset its own losses after the deal went sour. So I guess Iran is not going to get any money from the Hebes. That'll teach them to go into business with the Hebes in the first place. Well, the timing of last week's press conference at the Miami-Dade County State Attorney General's office could not have been more obvious. 8 days before the weekend's Memorial Day weekend hip-hop festival, on Miami Beach, a million-dollar, multi-agency, militarized seizure of the streets better known as the Urban Beach Week, resulting in hundreds of arrests each year on the baseless on baseless misdemeanors, including one on myself in 2009 for photographing a cop leaning against a car. Well, that ain't right, man. Come on. So what the hell's the rest of the story here? Okay. And 2 months after the Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle announced there would be no charges filed against cops who killed Raymond Harris in a barrage of bullets, a Bonnie and Clyde style killing. Well, I'll tell you. Considering Fernand Rundle did not call a press conference to discuss that long-awaited decision, and considered she never charged the cop who unlawfully seized a citizen's camera at gunpoint that year and was a little bewildered why she would be called a press conference on May 14th to announce that two high-ranking Miami Beach police officers were stripped of their badge for sending racist and pornographic emails from their work computers when neither of them were being charged with a crime. Especially when one of the cops, Major Angel Vasquez, doesn't sound white to me, could be, chose to retire last August to avoid getting fired and is now receiving $156,000 a year in pension pay, so there was plenty of time to call a press conference for that. Well, he's a pretty smart guy. And also, I wanted to remind you, if I didn't yesterday, that in the last 10 years, the Chicago city government has paid out $500 million in illegal arrests, police violence, home invasions, and so forth. $500 million. But perhaps she wanted to provide a platform for Miami Beach police officer Dan Oates to tell the nation that racism and sexism will not be tolerated in the scandal-plagued police department he took over last year's Memorial Day. In other words, the fact that blacks are going to riot in the street, tear the town up, that's not the story. The story is somebody sent a racial joke on the internet, a cop. Everything has to come to a stop, you know. So they'll keep bad cops on the payroll that don't do their work and don't do a damn thing and kick off good ones who send a racially charged joke. Yes, this will be his first Memorial Day weekend, which is better known as Urban Beach Week, when hundreds of Negroes from all over the country come down to party. Gee, I thought they couldn't find a job or anything. These niggers seem to have all kinds of money to travel around the country. Everybody has a horror story, but I've been covering it every year since 2008, and my horror stories only involved cops. Oh, I see. But just because the new chief is promoting a new and improved racist-free police department does not necessarily mean his officers will be less heavy-handed this year compared to previous years. Well, you better not beat over the head of a nigger down there during this weekend. You're going to lose your job. They already have two Miami-Dade corrections buses parked outside the police department, ready to start busing people to jail, Negroes to jail, as they do every Memorial Day weekend. So why should this year be different? Well, let's see. It is what justifies a budget over $1.5 million pay for cops from various agencies to roam the streets, making arrests, filling the jails, allowing them to validate the need to keep hiring them every year. Well, hell, that's a good deal for the cops. They want some rioting, just not too much where they get hurt. For cops, this is a big money weekend. Most of the cases end up getting dismissed, as my case did when the cop didn't show up in court. The real reason is political, and anybody can see that. Not that any of the journalists in the room admitted it in their reports. Okay. Oates is an outsider cop who's not been well received by the department, and the two cops in question, Major Angel Vasquez and Lieutenant Alex Carullo, which are probably both mestizos, were close friends with the department's previous chief, Raymond Martinez, who, and he may not be white either, who regularly receive their racist and pornographic emails. Well, it's those damn non-whites and their pornographic emails. Fire all the Mexican cops or Cuban cops. One of the memes depicted a game board titled Black Monopoly, filled with go-to-jail spaces rather than high-end boardwalk and park place, and the low-end Mediterranean and Baltic avenues as the real Monopoly. Click on this Miami News Times article to see all the memes that they sent out, which describe Black Monopoly meme as the least offensive of the bunch. You see, the truth doesn't matter. Truth is a lie. But Martinez was forced to retire last March after Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine, they're there all the time, at the top, took office in January 2014 on a campaign to clean up the corruption. Cities are corrupt. Cities will always be corrupt. They've always been corrupt, which happens to be the most popular campaign slogan in South Florida, but usually just means replacing one corrupt administration with another corrupt administration. You got that right, whoever wrote this article. Levine also happened to be at the press conference along with Miami Beach City Manager Jimmy Morales. Wonder what color he is. Quite a political display of power over a pair of cops who did nothing more than send out racist emails, which evidently is quite a common practice within the police departments from around the country, including Fort Lauderdale, San Francisco, and, of course, Ferguson, Missouri. But Fernandez Rundle said that up to 14 other officers are being investigated for these dirty, rotten, Metzger-type emails, and she said that their involvement in this scandal would jeopardize the cases of black suspects, where the officers are listed as witnesses. Well, I'm going to move on from there. That's enough of that stuff for Miami. Better watch the news. And also, what's that other beach down there in... I forget the name of that other beach on the East Coast that goes wild with niggers on Memorial Day and other days. Well, here's a little bit of an interesting article. There are moments when I come this close to quitting Twitter. The amount of hatred squeezed into 140 characters or less by lunatics, usually cloaked in anonymity, is enough to make you question your support for Twitter. Well, that's why they love it. And to the uninitiated, the torrent of bigotry can leave you feeling violated, like you were raped in the street with your clothes ripped off your body. Even the most seasoned, battle-scarred, seen-it-all, can't-nothing-shock-me individual will be left, ooh, by the filth in his or her Twitter feed. David Badesh of the NewCivilRightsMovement.com, following a blog posted on IfYouOnlyNews.com, wrote about the welcome President Barack Obama got upon joining Twitter in a story that left me slack-jawed. Badesh noted that it took just 10 minutes to start baptizing the leader of the free world, in Twitter racist sewer. Obama tweets at 11:30 a.m. on Monday was simple. Hello, Twitter. This is Barack. Really? 6 years in, they're finally giving me my own account. The first racist tweet from an account that has since been suspended appears to have come at 11:48 a.m. from a particularly nasty fellow who addressed the president as the nigger word and advised him to get cancer. The racist affront is the equivalent of being called a nigger word by a coward in passing cars as you're walking down the street. Ooh-hoo. If you follow me on the beast that is Twitter, you have seen me do battle with racist, homophobes, and willfully uninformed and ignorant, stupid people, except me. I strongly believe those people need to be exposed, for the sunlight is the best disinfectant, as the saying goes. Well, call me. You want to talk to me? I'll go on your radio show. I'll go on your television show, and I'll say all this stuff, and so what? Kiss my white ass. But you don't call, do you? And I strongly believe those people need to endure the public censure. Yeah. And the ridicule. Yeah. That comes with being revealed. Reveal me, baby. As a hate-filled bigot. And that's not a big Italian redwood either. Bigot. It is then that whatever slippery... So sliver of hope I have in humanity is restored. No doubt Obama has neither shock nor surprise by racist reception he received. After all, this is a man who endured 6 years of gasp-worthy slights. But I wonder whether deep down on some level the president wasn't disappointed. They don't love me. I work for the corporations, the predatory capitalists. And just because I don't work for black people, you shouldn't get mad at me. And I don't work for white people, they shouldn't get mad at me. It wouldn't make him naive, it would make him a human. Oh, okay, all right. So that's another racist article. This guy's a K-part. He's a member of the Washington Post editorial board and writes about politics and social issues. Oh, okay. Well, a bunch of ridiculous Negroes held a news conference in Cincinnati seeking to use the Major League Baseball All-Star Game as a platform to promote Black Lives Matter. Robert Ransdell, along with Matt Heimbach of the Traditionalist Youth Network and other white nationalists, shouted over the speakers with questions about out-of-control black-on-white problem crime. They succeeded in completely disrupting this insane media spectacle. Below is a blurb from a mainstream news report on the incident, along with a couple of video clips showing what happened. We need more of this happening. Negroes were caught completely off guard and clearly had no idea how to react to the message. Great stuff here, definitely. Check out the video clips.
A lot of plans for festivities underway. We found out today plans for protests also in the works. WRWT News 5's John London live with more on what we know. John.
Yeah, Lisa, the folks you're talking about had a hard time delivering their message this morning because they were interrupted and shouted down by a handful of protesters holding signs that read, "Diversity means chasing down the last white person, hashtag genocide." Take a look here. The ministers and other supporters were here at Great American Ballpark to say they're sending a letter asking Major League Baseball to stand with their call for police and criminal justice reform, emphasizing they're not calling for a boycott or any protest during All-Star Week. But as they started to speak, as you see here, several people who had obviously pre-planned an interruption talked over them, saying the problem they see is black-on-white violence. It was an unusual scene, to say the least. Rare that news events are disrupted this way. The disruptors were persistent and kept talking over the speakers, including Bishop Hilton.
My reaction is, again, to say, hey, if we want to have a conversation, let's have a conversation. If we want to talk, let's talk. We're willing to sit at a table and talk about whatever issues anyone has. This is not about black against white. It's about wrong against right. That's what it's about. And if we sit at the table, we can get some things together. That kind of crap is not going to help anything.
Eventually, someone brought out a megaphone and kept repeating, "We love you, Robert," to one of the protesters as he moved on down the street. The ministers are asking Major League Baseball to permit players to wear a patch, a button, some kind of armband in solidarity with Black Lives Matter movement and stand with communities of color. So the letter is on its way. The message made it out to the media despite an unanticipated disruption here at this news event. Again, the folks holding the news conference are not calling for a boycott. They're not calling for protest. They're saying,
well, the sword attacks that were taking place on the pizza delivery drivers that have been going on, these 13, 14-year-olds. didn't do nothing. You know, they say, oh, they didn't do nothing. Packing these delivery drivers, hold them at sword point while they rob them. Those are black kids. They're just white.
We're trying to identify, and also we were talking about Judge Hunter, and that was disgrace because of the corruption. But several years ago in North College Hill, a white man was beaten. The reason that this group of black youth said they beat him was because they were bored. The guy dies a year later.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
But the thing is, Judge Hunter gives these youth a book report as a punishment. I guarantee you,
Tracy Hunter.
Yeah, and she's now been convicted of corruption. But the thing is, I know if I walked out on a meal at your restaurant, I would receive more of a punishment than a book report.
We had a regular black person here saying that he died because of alcohol poisoning or something, excusing away the fact that he was beaten and he never hardly left his home after he got out of the hospital. So, you know, they had one of those mid press conferences over here where they're trying to bully MLB, Major League Baseball, into acknowledging, you know, Black Lives Matter, even though, you know, I don't believe personally that when you have when you have people running from the police, when you have people who are pushing shop owners out of the way and getting engaged in a fisticuff with the police later on, that does a lot of shouldn't matter. But quite honestly, when you're engaging in a career of criminal behavior, I don't believe your lives. That shouldn't matter to a sane and civil society.
Well, and we need to have their personal laws. So we were saying the idea that white lives matter.
Is there right now?
No one's. We didn't turn down Cincinnati a couple years ago.
Well, that was some white activists, white racists out on the street giving the Untermenschen a little problem there. And there was a very small audience, but you never know where it's going to go. Having been in hundreds of street actions over the years, I question importance of them, but it does give people the chance to get out and talk to people and get hardened up, and even in some cases learning how to box. Yo! That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on... wait a minute. Tomorrow's Saturn's day, right? Yeah, where'd I put my clock? My Frank Silva memorial clock. I moved it. Oh, here it is. Okay, let me reach up here and get it. Yeah, this is Freya's Day. And I forgot, we'll close out with a song for the ladies. Okay, see ya. 14:05.
It's impossible. Tell the sun to leave the sky. It's just impossible. It's impossible. Ask a baby not to cry. It's just impossible. Can I hold you closer to me and not feel you going through me? But the second that I never think of you, oh, how impossible. Can the ocean keep from rushing to the shore? It's just impossible. If I had you, could I ever want for more? It's just impossible. And tomorrow, should you ask me for the world, somehow I'd get it. I would sell my very soul and not regret it. For to live without your love, it's just impossible. ocean, keep from rushing to the shore, it's just impossible. If I had you, could I ever want for more? It's just impossible. And tomorrow, should you ask me for the world, somehow I'd get it. I would sell my very soul and not regret it. For to live without your love's just impossible, impossible.
And if I'm not mistaken, he was married to the same woman all his life. One wife, as far as I know.